Money FM 89.3, the best of the breakfast huddle.
It's time now for a regional roundup where we take a look at headlines from around the region. Call it a headline, call it drama. From Malaysia's Prime Minister Anwar Ibrahim's new cabinet to the question on who should represent Myanmar in the United Nations front. To give us some analysis on this, I've got Bridget Welsh, who is political analyst and honorary research associate, University of Nottingham, Malaysia. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks a lot for helping me out with this, Bridget. Quite a few things to discuss. Let's start off with the drama in Malaysia. Malaysia's Prime Minister Anwar Ibrahim's new cabinet. Any surprises for you in terms of the lineup that he has chosen? Any reaction there?
Well, I think for most Malaysians, it's quite a surprise to see UMNO and PKR and Pakatan Harapan coming together. And I think in particular, some of them were quite shocked to see Zahid Hamidi as the Deputy Prime Minister, especially given that it was a Harapan-dominant government. But I think this is a political compromise. It's an expedient government, and we can see that that in the composition.
Yeah, and two deputy prime ministers, right? We've also got Gambangan Party's Sarawak's Fadila Yusof, as well as BN's Ahmad Zahid Hamidi, as you mentioned. I'm curious, what's the rationale behind having two deputy prime ministers? Is it really just about appeasing more people?
I think it's not so much about appeasing people, but about the key components of the coalition. I think what we see in this unit, what is called a unity government, although it's not all the parties in Malaysia, it's the key, some of the key coalitions. This is that basically you have the Barisan Nasional, which is Zahid Hamidi is leading, and then you have GPS, which is 23 seats, and they're very important for the overall composition of the unity government from Sarawak, GPS. And so as a result, both of their coalition leaders, representatives, were given DPM positions.
And of course, Mr. Anwar appointing himself as a finance minister, what's the analysis on this? I mean, is he really the best person for the job?
Well, I think that, you know, I think there was a lot of criticism, and there still is a lot of criticism of his decision, because Harapan initially was rejecting that type of having the PM and having a portfolio at the same time. But I think what was pretty clear in the is that there was a need for compromise, and that compromise involved, you know, not only the different coalitions, but also, you know, other representatives who wanted Zafrul to be part of the mix, which was the former finance minister. So Anwar's position as finance minister is a result of that compromise. I do think that from an economic perspective, the three major players in economic ministers, Anwar, Rafizi Ramli, and Tuku Zafrul, they all have very strong personalities and have very different working styles. So I think this is going to be very interesting to see how well or how well they don't cooperate in terms of managing the economy.
Yeah, and that post-pandemic economy is something that a lot of young voters are paying very close attention to. One piece of news did catch my attention, though, the unity government agreeing to take a 20% cut in their monthly salaries. It's been a couple of days now. I do wonder, has that gone down well with the public?
Well, I think it's gone down well, but I think it's, I think Malaysians are more interested in what are the policies are going to do to reduce inflation, but it's been a positive sign. And I think, that Malaysian ministers are not paid as high as Singapore ones, but that does count for ordinary Malaysians.
Well, that's another topic altogether. But the drama that I've been really looking forward to talk about is this $185 billion scandal during Mr. Muhyiddin Yassin's term as PM. This was revealed by Mr. Anwar. What do you understand of this story? What's the backstory? And what are the latest developments?
Well, it's an ongoing investigation. It's been a preliminary investigation into this scandal. I think what was the trigger point was how much money was being spent during the general election, and people were asking very important questions of where did this money come from. And then, you know, subsequently it became revealed that there were a lot of funds spent without proper tender arrangements. And I think the investigation is part of that. And I think it's, of course, there are political dimensions to it. It's because it's against the previous government, and Muhyiddin Yassin would be one of the leaders of the opposition. So I think it's going to be very important to see not just that there's an investigation, but that the investigation is done in a very impartial way to investigate where this money came from and how it was distributed and who benefited from these funds.
Mm. I'm on the line this morning with Bridget Welsh, who is political analyst and honorary research associate, University of Nottingham, Malaysia. I want to talk about Indonesia now, where their Home Affairs Minister, Tito Karnavian, stated that he was asked by President Joko Widodo to handle inflation like handling COVID-19. Wait a minute, what exactly does that mean?
Well, I think it's not so clear to anyone, actually, when you first get that impression. But I think that, you know, the Indonesian Jokowi's government believes that they were able to manage manage COVID without having to put on serious restrictions to curb the economy. And I think those similar parallels are here to manage inflation without actually sending shockwaves to the economy and actually, you know, not trying to rock the boat in that way. We'll see whether or not they're able to do this, because it's, you know, you've had record inflation in Indonesia. It's a global phenomenon, but up until recently, Indonesia was very successful of being able to ameliorate some of the effects from the external markets, and also show that those were kind of external trends. Now they're hard hitting home in Indonesia, and I think it's going to involve multiple sets of actors. And I think this is the other element of what he meant, which is that you can't do it just by one ministry. You have to do multiple ministries to look at these issues.
Another talking point from the region is the United Nations delaying a decision on who should represent Myanmar. What I'm curious about is, why can't the current UN ambassador stay in his role?
Well, there are a couple things going on here. I mean, there are two countries that have really been, very close to the Myanmar junta.
Okay.
One of has been China and the other is Russia. And China has been a bit more distant, but Russia has been pretty adamant about not allowing the NUG representative who at the UN, Chomuntin, to actually stay on. And so what we've seen at the UN is that it looks like this issue is now going to be pushed to the General Assembly, and instead of it just being, you know, being blocked by Russia. So I think there will be some sort of decision that will be coming, but we'll see how it plays out. But I think clearly Russia has become one of the closest allies to the junta in Myanmar.
All right, definitely one to watch. I've been speaking with Bridget Welsh, who is political analyst and honorary research associate, University of Nottingham, Malaysia. Do appreciate your time this morning. Do take care and have a great day ahead.
You too.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.